Hi, I'm Josh. And look, I'm not saying that your mom has a dry pussy, but when she was at the Playboy Mansion, they called her the Dust Bunny.
Oh, well. I spent a hunk of time today at work. Hi, I'm Matt. Trying to go, making a joke out of like Hugh Hefner's last words being something about how, like, you know, it's either those curtains go or I do, you know, that type of a thing. And it's like, but his last instructions would be something along the lines of Dust Bunny, because he was just annoyed that it was all like getting dingy because no one cared since he was bedridden. Asking a bunny to do dusting seems like a very long way to go for a not very satisfying joke. In fact, you might even say it's toxic, but I am avenging it right now for all people who enjoy terrible rambling jokes.
I was trying to come up with, this is Charlie down in Austin, I was trying to come up with something about like trying to do like a Canadian sort of accent, throw in some A's or whatever else and be like, you know, the toxic alpha flight or alpha flight. Yeah. But I was like, I couldn't come up with something quick enough. I will just say the rug. I don't even know her.
And we promise not to pull the rug out from under you or the wool over your eyes. And if it's the same thing that is actually just a woolen rug, we won't do either of those things with that singular piece. And this is Horseshoe Hot Dog.
Yes, sir.
First up, we have a short that we call Rug or La Alfombra. And it should be noted that this was made with mostly senior citizens on the cast and crew. And that was just kind of part of its deal for existing. And that's very neat. And yeah. Also, this is awfully cute. It's about
it's really charming.
A killer rug. But I like that the rug doesn't like wrap around them and squeeze them like a snake or something. It has some kind of unholy digestive system underneath that we can't see.
Yeah.
And that makes it so easy to do effects with it because, you know, you can make a little lump under a rug or make it shake or something. And like, I thought that was very smart. Yeah,
maybe that might be the person that has unlocked the way to do Lovecraftian horror where you can't actually show the thing because it's supposed to be all non-Euclidean and unknowable. But it's like, yes, but if you put it behind a rug... then it can be a disgusting monster, interdimensional horror beast, but this side looks like a nice maroon thing that ties the room together.
Well, one of the many things I enjoyed about this was like, I like to think about like how the rug got to where it was like tied up, you know, like sitting by the trash cans, and she's like, oh, I should go take that rug. I like the idea that like the person who had the rug previously like had to like kidnap like a kind of an overweight person, it's like it's extra fatty. So like the rug was sort of like kind of docile.
Like a post Thanksgiving dinner rug.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's sort of like, it's like, oh, the tryptophan or not tryptophan. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
The thing that people think that it's like, I always love that. Now that I've gotten older, people are like, oh, it's the stuff of the turkey that makes you sleepy. Like, no, motherfucker, you ate 4,800 calories in one sitting. That's what makes
of carbs. There's like seven carb dishes at Thanksgiving. Yeah.
You put marshmallows on the vegetable.
it's like, what did you fill the gigantic, thick bird with? Like bread soup. Salad and combo, like it's like cool
bread and drippings of its own fat, like yes,
yeah, it's just like this is gonna put you to sleep, so whatever. But yes, I like the idea that like they had to like kidnap some Rubenesque fellow that sort of like made the rug kind of sleepy and like kind of title, what do you do with that string? Like, ah, nuts. The other thing I really love too is I love the after she feeds a couple things to the thing, and then it was sort of like I love the next morning with the first guy the feet are sticking out and it says, oh well, hands and feet, and
yeah, oh that was brilliant,
which is hilarious. But then the thing I love was like, you know, like the when it hasn't been eating for a little while and the cop shows up and it kind of slowly rears up behind him, but then it's like fussing at her, the old lady, and then like kind of nips at her ankle or whatever, she kind of runs upstairs. But what I love, and I don't know if this was intentional, they just happened upon this bit of humor, but it was like she's upstairs in her bedroom with the door closed or else, and you can hear her, she's in bed, she can hear the rug kind of grumbling or else, but you look down the stairway or else, and it's only made it up like a couple of stairs because like stairs are hard if you don't have bones,
right?
And I thought that was so funny. that really tickled me. I thought that was really funny.
I think a big part of what makes this like legitimately work, aside from just being like charming, is that like a lot of what's happening here is actually kind of underplayed in a way that is very delightful. Like the idea of the big like slobbering rug that eats things is like a pretty broad monster, but I think that's just to allow it to keep the light tone. But like just the old lady just kind of every now and then sort of muttering something murderous and then kind of going about her day being fussy about something entirely unrelated. And like, it's all just got this, it just lets the absurdity kind of speak for itself in a way that is very pleasing. It's kind of like a, I don't know if you'd quite call it the like overdrawn at the memory bank kind of thing of like, this is all madness, but like, we're all just going to kind of go with it. So. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Well, there's something about that that just was like a very deft hand that I enjoyed.
The other thing that I thought was so, I wonder if this stuck out to you guys too, was the cop shows up and they're like, oh, some of the neighbors have been complaining about this awful smell or else. And he's like, I saw something died in here or else. They don't explain that necessarily. They just sort of was like some byproduct of this.
Yeah. the rug just shits in the backyard apparently.
Yeah. Just sort of. Kind of, you know, like carpet from Aladdin. It just sort of hops up on its end and kind of bumps itself outside to take a dump. Like, I don't know what it is, but I love that they threw that in there, just like with no real explanation. Sort of like, I was like, okay, sure. Apparently, that's a thing that. All right, well, fine. So, like, I find it kind of tickled me a little bit. I thought it was funny. Good job on this one, Matt. This was fun.
Well found. Watch it, folks. It's cool. Cool. So let's talk then, I think, first about Dust Bunny or Conejo del Polvo.
Hell yeah.
Neat.
As they say, south of the border and a lot of other places, to be honest.
Does that idiom actually translate?
It just, probably not. It's probably Duende because everything is Duende.
Well, there you go.
Like goblin, dwarf, gnome.
Yeah, I suppose.
Ghost, like... It's what is that thing? It's a duende, you know. Don't worry about it. I don't think there are any duendes in this, but there is a dust bunny that becomes a giant slobbery monster and lives under a girl's bed and ate her parents, and so she hires a hitman to kill the monster.
Which, I really like that they take the detail of it eats multiple sets of her parents. She keeps getting new parents and they also get eaten.
So I think the best way to prepare for this is like, think about some of the Roald Dahl stories, like The Witches, especially James and the Giant Peach, and just push that a couple more notches down the dial. And it's that same kind of like Edward Gorey kind of ghastly things, but like very bright colors, you know, not gory, but in this thing. And it's got this kind of like tinge of Amelie to it. And then you get this very strange kind of, from the girl's perspective, it's a fairy tale. And from the hitman's perspective, it's life and death. And it's hard to pin down what exactly is going on for a little bit. But the style in this is really the thing that stands out. Like the set design, the wallpaper, like everything's very maximal and texture on texture on texture. And the outfits, man, the things that they put Mads Mikkelsen in. It was like it was a challenge to them to like, how can we make him just look like a guy? Not even like a guy, but like a mook, you know, and I think they do. But yeah, this is big and really out. Like it's not literal at all. Like it's super fantastical for a movie about a hitman. And I know that some people found that off-putting, like on the internet, because that's what the internet does.
Right.
But I don't know. I felt like that tone was really cool and it was nice to see something so stylized.
Well, they anchored it so well. I think that was the thing that really stood out to me was that, like, they have this just style out the ass with everything, like, the way it's shot and, like, the way it looks. And yeah, the costuming and all the rest. I mean, there's just so much cool style to it. But, like, the interactions between the little girl and Mikkelsen, it's like, are just so cool. Like, he almost immediately just doesn't do any kind of babying or whatever, but he's not, like, unnecessarily... like unkind either. It's just very matter of fact, like, what about this with this, this thing, this thing, this thing, that thing. Like, it's just kind of like, and they just tear away that, like, you know, stuff, the fluffy stuff. And it's just like, so you get this really kind of real decent and interesting thing. And then the more you kind of watch him interact with the little girl, like there's a lot of things that occur that are not said, which I really, I think took a lot of restraint to do, because I think you could have absolutely had big, long, gauzy monologues about, you know, your safety and this, that, whatever, and blah, 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 blah. I just don't think they have to say any of it. It was just sort of like there. And so they were, there was, they did a really great thing anchoring all the just the exceptional style and technique with some kind of decent, earnest kind of stuff. And they leave some things kind of like really sort of unexplained, like the whole thing, you know, until you get to the end where you kind of, you know, understand what the deal with the monster is, like the whole thing with like the first pair of parents and then the second pair of parents or whatever. And like the maybe, I don't know if you guys get this from this, but I was like thinking like, okay, well, it seems like maybe the first parents were not good. Like they were kind of bad people. That's the vibe that I got. Mm-hmm. And like, she had kind of like wishing, like kind of hiding under her covers, like wishing for something to make them go away kind of thing. Or like, you know, cause just, you know, I think they never go out and say it necessarily, which is kind of a, yeah, it's sort of a, so yeah, it's like, and I thought that was kind of an interesting choice, because they could have 10,000% done like a big old, like, and then this is what really happened. And you get this like fucking child trauma awfulness for 10 minutes. And they just did, they just sort of like, once you start to kind of peel away the onion, you're like, oh yeah, it's not, she, something real bad happened the first time around. Like that's no good. And so it's like,
I do also appreciate that they actually say, so so they weren't nice. Your parents weren't nice. And she said, some of them were nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, I love that layer in just those few words. It's like, once I let loose this anger that I have inside of me, it hits everybody.
Yeah.
And that's just, and it, like, this is one that I wouldn't get at all held up on, like, well, is the monster a literal thing, or is it just in her head, or is it like an unreliable narrator? And it's more just, it's the metaphor, right, for her trauma and anger. And it doesn't have to, that doesn't have to translate to it not being real in the movie.
Well, that was what the other brilliant thing that Fuller did in this was, like, the whole thing with like the assassins coming after him, or like they're coming after her, and they're trying to figure out whatever, you know, all that kind of stuff, is that like she is seeing this like gigantic monster coming out of the ground in remarkable ways that I don't think I've really seen. The way it interacts with his environment was just watching David Dashmalia just be like, don't touch the floor. It's just like, the guy was so cool. But it's like, all that stuff was really super cool. But like, up until you get to that point, like, all this, like, she knows what's going on. She knows, she can see what's happening. But like, from his perspective, it's like, oh, they were coming after him, but they got the apartments mixed up or something. And like, so like, oh, he's seeing, oh, you're killing, I saw you kill this dragon. Like, oh no, it's just a bunch of guys. Like, oh no, they did the monster eater. Like, you know, no, there was the monsters that are, there's these assassins. Like, so up until you get to that 2/3 of the way through, you're like, you know, everything she's describing, he's just sort of taking as being like, this is how he's, or how she's interpreting what she's seeing. And it's like, I don't know, it's just literal. But it's just like, and I thought that was such a clever, cool, not overwrought, not overexplained way to kind of deal with that. Because I think without that component, it's sort of like, you know, you get the kind of like, then you get the police ruling, and you get the, you know, kind of like, why aren't they looking for these missing people? Like, what the hell? You know, like, it's just, you start to go like, it feels like you're leaving stuff out for no reason. And it's like, but really, it's just sort of like, it's like you get this lovely parallel of, it's like the thing in Monster Squad where the kid is like, you know, there's a mummy in the closet, and Dad opens the door where he can't see her out of the closet. Like, oh, there's no mummies in there. And you see the mummy. And kind of like, is that? This is what it reminds me of. It's like, yeah, that's pretty cool. Like, Fuller made a lot of great decisions, I think, in this. He just really did a terrific job of trusting the audience. But then that would be the other thing that the other thing I would bring up with this is that, like, I love this. I thought this was wonderful. It was just right up my alley. Of just like the kind of fantastical, weird, sort of dark, sort of children's adventure thing. You know, not unlike a Goonies, Gremlins, you know, Flight of the Navigator, Explorers kind of thing. It fits in that realm of stuff, or their rare exports is another one. But it's like, And I don't think, as Rick Rubin says, you don't have to think about the audience when you're creating art. You create art because you want to make a thing you want to make. And it's like, and I think that's true. But all that being said, it's like I was texting you guys before, it was like this combination of like Paper Moon and Amelie and John Wick and like all these things. Like, what's the audience necessarily for this thing?
I asked that same question to myself watching it.
It's kind of like, because like, I love it. This, great.
But there can't be that many of me out there.
Yeah,
like, we learned that from Scott Pilgrim, right?
We're 3 out of 3 for the podcast, though.
Yeah, for sure. Which, again, is usually a bad sign, because our record of agreeing with the public at large is not usually good. So.
I'm thinking people who are really into Pushing Daisies or Hannibal, and or Hannibal, is the audience for this. Because mm-hmm. like there was enough of an audience for both of those things to keep them going for a little while, right?
Yeah.
And then they became really beloved after they were gone. You know, I think they're talking about another season of Pushing Daisies, which, sure.
Yeah.
But
this felt like something that...
Yeah, if you like those things. Yeah.
Yeah. No, even as I was watching it, I felt like this is going to be the kind of thing that 5 years from now, people will be going, we slept on this when it was new, but it's going to be...
Another Lisa Frankenstein.
Kind of. It's well, I mean, the takeaway I had, my first big impression when I was done is like, this is the best Beetlejuice movie I've seen since the first one. Because it just gives you that weird for weird's sake in a way that I was just so delighted by. Where I think the movie has, basically one issue it's dealing with, and it does that in 3 scenes, all of which take up about 30 seconds. Which leaves so much freedom for the rest of this movie to just get weird with it. And I also think that scene in Chinatown is maybe the best live action Miyazaki thing I've ever seen.
Oh my God, pretty, dude.
Yeah.
Was that not just eerily Spirited Away? Mm-hmm. Like watching all that and the drama of that. Yeah. Where I was just like, good Lord. Like it's like, I haven't been wanting to just like sit here and gush for 30 minutes. So I've been trying to like just choose my moment to like say a bunch of shit and then be done so I don't take forever. But yeah, I absolutely love every second of this, even with acknowledging that like they're clearly stretching their budget in places, because there's a moment where our dude swings out of like from the bathroom to the hallway near the end, and I'm like, that is just a JPEG of a bathroom that he is swinging in front of. Like, it's not even well green screened. It is literally just like, we got to get this one shot and we missed something. And at the same time, I was going, I get it. The rest of this is so lush and beautiful that if there's like the occasional shot that doesn't look quite right, I think you can tell that it's not for lack of trying. It's just for trying so hard in so many different directions throughout that make it just so much fun to watch. So
I think I've also just lowered my standards for CGI in movies in general.
Me too.
Because like, Gladiator 2 was really fun, except they had these baboons that looked like they were rendered on a PS3. And it's just like, holy shit, this is Ridley Scott and a $200 million movie. What? Okay. So when I see something now that's like a little low rent, especially if everything around it is really working, it's just like, yeah, it's fine. Like that, some of the scenes with the bunny moving under the floorboards looked like they were stop motion or like something very, very practical.
I even wondered about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was cool enough to, it's like, yeah, if some things are rough around the edges, that's the aesthetic, man. You know, it's the same as Sotorn and, you know, the Amelie thing.
Well, it's like what they did with, oh my good gracious sakes. How could I not think of it? Brad Doherty, the Christmassy one with Toni Collette and, oh my goodness gracious, how can I think of the name of it?
I do not know that one.
Toni Collette.
Yeah, it's like where it's like they're kind of stuck in the, kind of, they realize they're stuck in the snow globe, kind of like this is a warning, like stop being shitty.
Oh, wait, Krampus?
Krampus, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, God, Jesus Christ. Where like
someone
you watch
just
that,
screaming at their, whatever they're playing their
just,
podcast.
Like, God damn it. Like, well, I fucking love that movie.
Yeah, sorry, just, Troy. You know,
it's like, why can I not, why, like, it's the guy. It's the Santa with the horns. But like, what I love is like, you know, because the internet has a very poor track record in terms of knowing what effects are. Like Guillermo del Toro does that in every one of his movies. They're like, oh, this is CGI, that's CGI, whatever else. You watch it making up, like, nope, all practical, fuck off. And yeah. But in Krampus, there's that thing where like oh, some of the scenes outside, all they'll just look like it on a soundstage, whatever else. And it's like, yes, but everything was the snow and the camera in a track embedded into the ground part. They run it along the thing and they're moving the trees around, or else it's like it's all there. And it's like, that's fucking great. And so, like, you know, I was surprised by that. You know, you get to see some stuff. You're like, oh, yeah, they totally did a thing. They were just like, do it under this thing. Or they're like, he's got to run along this little track and like with his like arm and like a thing. And he's got like, push up these little parts as they go along and go. And he's, you know, Kevin's going to walk along and make him go. It's like, that's fucking cool. So it wouldn't surprise me if some of those little intermixed things were practical. Like all the thing with like the bed that keeps, you know, bopping up and down and flipping over and whatever. Like when Michelson's like upside down on the bed, like holding on and whatever else. It's just like, ah, rules. So, you know, it's just, but the other one besides Lisa Frankenstein, Josh, I was thinking of, and I know everybody's mileage is different, but the one from a few years ago with Nick Cage, Renfield, it was like,
oh yeah,
that's fucking great. And it was like, but who was the audience? Or like, you know, or Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters, or one of those. Like, it's just, these things exist and like they're fantastic, but you're like, I worry about the broken hearts behind the scenes of being like, oh, people will love this. And it's like, yeah. It doesn't, you know, like, I've long ago given up on the idea that, like, everyone in the world will understand, like, why, like, you know, somebody like Tom Waits is one of the best musicians that ever lived. Like, I've just given up on the idea that that's ever going to work. And it's just sort of like, well, so it's just sort of with something like this, like, I love this. This was wonderful. And I just kind of go, like, but I mean, is this a multiplex kind of a movie? Is this the thing that people are going to be, you know, rushing out to do? And, like, I don't know. It's like, eh.
I think if it didn't have the R rating.
Oh, was it really? I didn't realize.
Yeah, they gave it an R.
Huh.
And because he was on record after that, like, you know, it feels like this is a very, like, it was aimed to be at that, like, teenager PG-13 spot, because that's what we wanted to make. It's like a story, like a dark story for kids, you know, in the classic, like, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory kind of vein.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, got the R slapped on it. And I think at that point, it just has to go to streaming.
Yeah.
This was Toronto, I think. And I don't think this even, I mean, they played it here for like a week. And it was like one or two showings a day for like a week.
Yeah, and that was like, it. I think a single week where I just wasn't able to get out to it. So.
Yeah, so this is one of those things where it's like, God bless Brian Fuller. God bless everybody who was involved in this, whatever. But I just... You know, and there's so much art. There's so much, you know, art that gets created nowadays that just doesn't fighting through the fog. I think is like there's a lot more avenues for things, but I think fighting through the fog has become harder.
Yeah, finding the good stuff is harder. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just and from an artist's perspective, like trying to get it to where somebody can access it. It's just sort of I don't know. It's an interesting kind of challenge because, like, I mean, any streaming thingy. You can just discover just so much amazingly well-made things from all around the world. And it's like, for one thing, it's like the matter of finding the time. But then for two, like, I've said this for years, where, like, artists need to have their act together better when it comes to, like, letting people know about things. Because, like, you know, I'm not the most important person in the world, but if I hear about your movie or your album or your something, and then... You know, I go to your website and go find out, like, oh, coming soon. Like, okay, cool. Well, I'll check into that a couple weeks later. They're like, oh, we got a theater in Texas. Like, cool. It's a big fucking place. Where is that going to be and when is that going to be? And then, like, no other data. Like, usually in another week, I've forgotten. And it's like, and maybe I'll remember at some point, but I'm just going to forget. And it's sort of like, so I've gotten a little bit indignant a little bit towards artists a little bit because I just kind of get where I'm like, you just don't have the luxury of like people beating a path to your door, I don't think. And so it's sort of like, so it's, I don't know, it's one of those things where with something like this and the next one, another one we're going to talk about this evening, Toxic Avenger. I mean, that took nearly three fucking years to get, you know, get it for anywhere I can actually see it. And, you know, before that, another Fantastic Fest movie that I dearly love was Lads of the Fox Fairy. And that took years for that to become available. So it's like, you know, I don't know. It's one of those things. Like, I think there's a little bit of fault on all sides in terms of, You know, like, I'm sure you guys have heard Wildwood, the new Leica thing, which looks fucking amazing. Like, they're doing this thing with Phasm Events for some godforsaken reason. And it's like, but it's like, one of the other side of the coin, if like no distributors, like, oh, they want to put any weight behind it, then it's like, what are your options? Like, man, not a whole lot of options. Like, there's a reason why fucking Aardman does commercials for department stores in Britain every year. Like, you know, but one thing is beloved, their walls and government are beloved, but you know, like George Clooney once said about the Oceans movies, like, I make an Oceans movie and then I get to make five other projects. Then I make another Oceans movie and I get to make five other projects. Like, there's something to that. So, you know, so I hope the way that this kind of went up and then out and then, you know, the way this went isn't going to dissuade the Brian Fullers of the world to keep doing really creative shit, because this is really cool.
It also does look like it's getting a decent push on streaming. It showed up on my just like recommended.
Oh yeah, I've noticed that too.
Yeah,
and it was pretty prominently featured in the on the Roku main menu, but which I'm sure is personalized based on what people have watched. But enough people have watched his shit that I would imagine, like, if you binged Hannibal a couple times, that would pop up. As well, it should.
Yeah.
The one other thing I wanted to make sure to say is that kid is great.
Oh, yes, God, she's fabulous. She's fabulous.
You have, like, there's a whole alignment chart of ways that you can fuck that up.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. You have, like, the kid who's too glum and is, like, the kid from The Ring where he's, like, 40 years old.
Yeah,
right.
He just looks like he's ready to retire. You can make her too, like, sassy and trying to be clever, and that sucks. You can make her, like, too adult that way. Like, you can make her just bratty and insufferable, and she does none of those things. She's just kind of natural, and she's a little precocious for her age, but not outside of the way that she should be, because she's still, like, things throw her for a loop in a childlike way, and
yeah,
things that wouldn't faze the adults, right?
But, like, in a few years she'll be Haley Steinfeld from True Grit. Like, she will harden further into her final form.
She just feels so natural throughout, but
yeah,
still
her delivery,
like,
is
a fun
always
character.
Really good.
Yeah.
I think I'm really glad you mentioned that, Joshua, because yeah, you're right. Like, there is 53 ways to screw that up, and that little girl does such a great job. Like, the bit where Sigourney Weaver and him are in that cafe, the Wes Anderson cafe, and you know, she's this whole thing. She comes walking in. Sigourney Weaver lays out all this, like, saccharine, kind of like, "Oh, come sit by me, sweetie Rose." And she's listening. I don't know you. Yeah. It's fucking great. It's like, oh, it's just so, yeah. So hats off to that little girl, because, like, there are parts that just make your heart ache a little bit. Other parts were like, yeah, go on. Yeah, there's a sharpness. Like, that's cool. So yeah, they did that really, really well. I'm glad you mentioned that, Joshua.
The charisma between her and Mickelson too needs to be.
Oh yeah,
it is undeniable. Like, the number of times they go back to the well with him not being able to say her name right.
Oh God,
and it's just the
because
best
it hits
thing.
Different every time.
Yeah. It does, and it's but you're always like, yes, there's more of this forever. Like, it's so good.
Well, that's what I mean. They did such a good job of just, like, including those little things in there, and it's just like, ah, just brilliant. Like I said, the Desmillion's face where it's just, don't touch the floor. Like, this abject terror in his face is so funny. It's like, just so much good in this. It was just so cool. I really, really enjoyed this a lot.
So I think for me, it's if you are someone who likes whimsy in measured doses, because, like, the last Wes Anderson one that I saw was Asteroid City, and it really made me want to punch somebody. But even at that level of reduced whimsy tolerance, I was super into this. So unless you really want things gritty and real, watch this for sure. For me, it's a 9 out of 10. God damn it, I want that chicken lamp.
Oh, you know, I Googled that while I was watching the movie, right? Amazon
you were
was
like,
yeah, Amazon has got you for like $20, bud. Like, now, if you want one with the actual feathers like that, then you're looking into like Etsy territory. But apparently,
well, I think
there are a lot of people that sell chicken ass lamps. It's really weird.
Well, and the fact that they made that a runner too, like, that was the other thing. It was
so
just like,
good.
She, he, like, well, like, the seventh or eighth time she does that, he goes, "Stop doing that." And she goes,
And then when she does that to Sigourney Weaver in the restaurant, where she's just fucking with something, and you're like, this kid is just like, because part of it is like, she is just a little kid. She'd be bored and fidgety, but also like, she knows what she's doing.
Well, that's why one of the comparisons of why I kept thinking of Paper Moon, because I just thinking of Tatum O'Neill in those scenes where it's sort of like, it's like, it's just sort of like, it's like, God, this should be grating, but I love that there's, this is an aware little creature. Like, this is not just sort of like, this is not an id thing. This is just sort of like this, like, very involved. And it's like, it's so cool. It's so easy to not do right. And it's just like, this works so beautifully. Like, that's great. Where'd you put your number, Matthew?
Oh, right. I didn't do a number. I'm also there with the 9. Yeah. Like I said, there's little tiny bits that are a little fidgety here and there around the corners and the edges. But overall, this is just perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be, I'm going to be right there in that same spot. I just, you know, I like style as much as the next person, you know, whatever else. But if you don't put the work into character builds and the way that they built out the relationship with the two of them, style can overtake things and can get insufferable. Like, I don't know if either one of you saw that one from a couple of years ago with, I think it was Brad Pitt, I think, was it Bullet Train, I think is the.
Oh, no, I never got to that.
I just saw that recently, and it was like, I was mildly entertained, you know? I wasn't mad.
Yeah, it doesn't put you to sleep, but it's like, boy, could it have used just any humans, like any human stuff. Because it's like, the style's got it in spades, but like, there's no human parts. And it's just like, hey. So it's just sort of like, it's, you know, I can appreciate style and all that kind of thing. And I'm really glad you also mentioned the thing, because I don't say it lightly when I talk about things that are being Miyazaki-like. I don't say that lightly, like, ever. Like, it's just one of those things where you really have to be a certain level, like the kind of the Guillermo del Toro, Miyazaki level of like that blending of fantasy and horror and heartfelt and tragedy kind of thing. And it's like, it's not easy to pull off, but there were parts of this. Yeah, that market sequence is just sort of was like
astonishing.
Like, God damn, you just expect some demon with the. Which one is the one that has the eyeball in the butt? Which one is that one?
I can never remember what the name of it is.
I forget his name. The one is just like, just look at my butt. It's like, an eyeball. Like, and kind of, like, you just expect him to be wandering around the background, like looking at, like, you know, one lens glasses, you know, like kind of thing. It's just sort of like that was that feel, and it just had such a beautiful pulse to it. It's awesome. So yeah, I'm the same way. I'm gonna say 9 out of 10. 9 out of 10. Just a joyful thing. Just a joyful thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, we'll take a quick break and then we'll talk about our other two flicks. Yes.
Yes, sir.
So next up we have The Queens of the Dead, or Las Reinas de los Muertos. Folks, I'm sorry. I thought this was real cute. This is George Romero's kid making a movie about zombies that's very much aware of zombie movies and even has a little bit of the Night of the Living Dead playing in the background in one scene. But all in the world of like drag queens and club kids on a night that there's going to be a big old gay old time, I think is how they refer to it. So it's your basic zombie movie with Romero zombies, and just the characters are very colorful and, like, I enjoyed most of them. That's the thing. Like, I liked all of these characters very much, except for the super bitchy little guy. And then by the end of it, he had a little more depth. But, you know, the one that makes it all the way through.
Yeah, I was trying to... Precious, maybe? No.
Arjun?
I forget. I don't know. It was something silly. But, yeah, that was, like, the only character arc, I think. Was being slightly less douchey.
Right. But then you have, like, you know, people who have had their arguments in the past and they have to come together and face this threat. And I don't know. I like these people. The guy who plays Beyonce was also in the Mean Girls musical, which I watched because I have a daughter. And he is great. I kind of like him and everything. He's very easy to like. And also Katie O'Brien, who plays Dre.
Yeah, she's great in everything.
yeah, she's from Star Wars and Lovelace Bleeding, and yeah, just like,
no, she's real solid,
mesmerizing to look at too. Just, I don't know, that is a, that's a face you just can't look away from. So, and we have, you know, like the, some Margaret Cho cameo, some Ricky Lindholm is in here, Tom Savini wanders by for a minute. It's like, I found this charming. And then as soon as Charlie said he didn't care for one of them this week, I was like, oh, that's right. Oh, a lot of these characters are going to make Charlie very angry. And not in like a homophobic way, but just like, sometimes people are just grating.
Yeah.
Well, that's the, yeah,
like,
that's
that. Oh, if they start grating, is, am I right?
Yeah, that's a lot of it. Cause I mean, like, part of it too, like, and I say this with affection, but like, Katie O'Brien is like, is a legitimate like actor. Like, and you can even, even with this material, like, she just is solid as a rock. Like, she's just really good. And it's like, there's one or two other people in here that are like really good. And then everybody else is also in it. And so, like, so then you take the kind of heightened sort of, you know, the kind of the cultural touchstones, which, you know, I have no personal issue whatsoever. Like, my brother's wedding was officiated by a drag queen that they've been friends with, and he's been friends with since he was like 18. They were one of her closest family friends, and like, that's who officiated his wedding. So like, it's not a personal issue. Yeah. It's just, there's a level at which when you're a bad actor and you're doing that shtick, it just becomes so, and I say shtick because it's a performance, not because it's actual people. Like, if it was a documentary, that would be kind of insensitive, but like, it's a movie. So like, it's no, a level
he
of,
does push it really hard.
Yeah. And it's just like, and so that part of it, like, you know, like I said, it's just, it, that's the part that wore me out, was just sort of like, you have a couple of legitimate actors in this, and then you have everybody else who just is kind of there. And then, you know, like, they're real trying. Like, there's a lot of try, you know, like, I don't think any of this is cynical. Although, so Matt, maybe you can help me out with this. The one, so the Katie O'Brien's character is wearing this shirt in this, that like, is that a reference to some other thing? Because like, for a while I thought they were referencing that fucking movie Pound Cake in that shirt.
Well, I'm trying to remember. I remember noticing the shirt too. Was it, did it just say that or what was it?
Well, no, it was like, it had that big muscular, kind of really ridiculously large muscular thing with like the black hood. And then it said something on the back about something, motherfucker, or something other. But it was like, but that thing looked like the thing from Pound Cake. And I was like, oh, please don't tell me that you're championing
I
that
don't
piece
think
of garbage.
So.
I really I hope that wasn't the case. Because
it wasn't like, that's also like, it's such a vague thing to try to convey in that way that like, it'd be really hard to tell even if it was. But I would,
yeah,
I would
that was,
assume not. But
because it wasn't like an actual branded shirt. It wasn't like a branded, it wasn't like, it didn't yeah. say like, but so, I mean, I don't think it really was, but I think that kept distracting me. I was like, it's a fucking movie.
A movie you don't enjoy reminding you of a movie you fucking hated is
yeah,
not ideal.
Like, yeah, it's not good. you know, and then the other thing, too, and like,
yeah, I had similar problems, I think, with just the fact that, like, I hate all these characters and they're just all awful and awful. And I was like, watching this going, I don't understand why every time you see drag queens in, like, meh movies like this, they're like the most annoying, shrill, awful characters. And I'm like, everyone I know that does drag is really chill and cool. Like, you'd think you'd want to be represented as not just being this vapid and awful, but like, I don't know, maybe that's part of like the joke of it, I don't know. But otherwise, like, you put that part aside, then it's just like, this was kind of one of those like, what would have been like a straight to DVD or straight to video type thing, or like a Asylum flick you'd find with, like, you know, it's like some, this is essentially the same thing you see when it's like, what was the movie with Feast? This is the same kind of thing. So, bunch of barflies have to fight monsters. Okay. Bunch of drag queens have to fight zombies. There's the one with like Jenna Jameson where a bunch of strippers have to fight zombies. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, okay, here's a, like, it's like pro wrestling in the early 90s. Everything's an occupation versus a monster. So it's like, it's just one of those. So if like having it be about drag queens makes it more interesting to you, great. That might give this an extra like half a point compared to the one that's like not about, you know, compared to like the improv team that has to fight zombies.
Oh, Jesus,
like,
Christ.
I'm sure that exists and I hate that it probably does.
Oh, God. Yeah. But, just like,
you know what I mean,
oh,
though? It's just like,
ouch.
Pick your subculture and, you know, give them a monster to fight. So, yeah. But yeah, this is just kind of, I just waited for this to be over.
Well, and I think part of it too, like just to pull it back ever so slightly, like, yeah, of course, this is George's daughter, and like, you know, and I don't think, like I said, none of this is coming from a cynical place, absolutely not. That being said, I mean, some of this is just shot like mid porn, kind of like it's not. Just one person standing in camera, another person walks into camera, and like, and then the camera stays there, and they talk at each other, and then the next scene is, and it's like, God,
like, well, it's shot almost like it's a stage play because there's just bunches of people standing around, but then there's also like no blocking; they are just kind of meandering around in the background, and like, it's like there's no focus to any of the scenes. It's just keep everybody in this one big room in case we need to focus on someone else for a second. It's really
the number of times the meathead guy comes back into scene, where like it just felt more like noises off, kind of like it was like he popping like, hey, what's the coming to go? Is it Tutti Frutti? Like, I'm like, okay. Jesus Christ, then off he'll go again. And it was like, and that's what it kind of like, and I don't say it needs to be mean, it just sort of was like forgetting about the cultural components or those touchstones or whatever, like, you know, taking away from that, it's more just sort of like from a craft standpoint, like, I do think it's not unreasonable to have the expectation be a little higher for like how it could look or be, because like, you know, what's the Scout's Guide to Zombie Apocalypse is one that I loved. Spontaneous is another one that I really loved, a recent memory, where like, you know, there are some stylistic choices, whatever else, but they do some things with the camera and the blocking and the editing where they're bringing more, to that part of the production. Whereas, like, this absolutely had a lot of try to it, but it's like at a certain point, like, there's that part of it felt super clunky. So, like, that was another part that really made it, like, harder to get through, because I kept being like, okay, now's the part where they're going to really accelerate what they're doing. They're going to really kind of get moving. And I was like, nope, we're going to have more of these statically blocked things. And it's just like, man. So I don't know. So that was part of it too, as shitty as that is to say, but it's like, that was another part that just wore me out.
Yeah. And I'm not really judging it on the merits either. It's kind of rough around the edges. And although, like, I was more stopped by Toxic Avenger because it was very self-consciously rough around the edges, but, you know, we can get over to that. But yeah, I'm not saying like this movie is actually very well directed and shot and acted and scripted. It's just like, I liked it. You know, it's, I enjoy seeing, like, I enjoy movies about gay people a lot, because I didn't have any of those growing up, and I didn't really know many gay people growing up. I don't have the chance to get inside that subculture much. And so it's like, yeah, like, show me all the flavors of gay in this thing. Let me understand some of that better. And then like, and then I'm just like, this is real cute. And like, they seem to be having a good time. And it is just like the silliest of reasons to like a thing, but then kind of the only reason to like a thing. But yes, I think I would agree with almost everything you say, and then go, and it was so cute. And I liked it, you know, like.
Well, I think that's, although I did like a lot of power to
all of the characters, really, except for like Super Twink. The rest of them were fun to me.
Well, and that's kind of what it boils down to, is ultimately, like, with any of these kinds of things, I think the bottom line really is intentionality. Like, if you set out to make this movie because you're like, I'm going to do a cash grab on trying to take advantage of like subculture, like, that would make you a shitty human being. Just, I don't think Tina Romero is doing that by any stretch of imagination. If you walk into this going like, I don't know how to get through this because of all these fucking queer people, like, that's your problem, not the material's fault. So like, it's one of those things where, like, once you set those things aside, it's like, oh,
but yes. And I also love how they treated the lunkhead kind of vaguely homophobic, but mostly just not really thinking about things guy. I love how they treated him, because he got to be like a dickhead, and then he got to just very slowly and subtly and naturally go like, oh, she's good with a wrench. Good job.
Yeah.
Like, right. Oh, that's actually, that does look cool the way you did your hair like that. Oh, what are you? You're like a they? Like, how does that work? Oh, that's how it works? Oh. And he just gets to evolve through the whole course of the thing.
They're just like us.
And that's so much better than just having him be shitty for the entire run.
Yeah, punchline. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, and that's, I'm glad you mentioned that, Joshua, because that's actually one of those things that there's quite a few bits of this that actually stand out as being something that somebody thought about. So we did actually legitimately
The whole
think
subplot
about.
With Ricky Lindholm's character that just is separate from the action, but it's just so about just her and the girl that she then takes under her wing.
Well, see, and that's the part. See, I love the Ricky Lindholm part, but the other part that I really fucking hated was the Margaret Cho character. Jesus fucking Christ. Uh-huh. It's just sort of like, it's just like, it's like, oh, you're talking to my woman? Like, oh, fuck off. Like, shut up. Just, god damn. Like, it was just so fucking annoying. Like, it's just like, and I like her. It's just so like, but every time she spoke, I was just like, shut the fuck up. Like, god damn. It's just like,
I didn't realize that was Margaret Cho until we were recording.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There was something else she was in a few years ago where it was sort of like, yeah, about two thirds of the way.
I feel like I saw her in something a while ago. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, oh, yeah, I was like, I kind of forgot about her. I haven't seen her in a while.
Well, it's like Amy Sedaris and Mandalorian. And you're like,
oh,
I
yeah.
I know that.
Oh,
face.
My God. Like, it's an old face. Code, but it checks out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's funny.
Is that Amy Poehler? No.
No. It's the other funny Amy.
Yeah. Amy Poehler's super funny. Don't hate.
Yeah. She's amazing. I love Amy Poehler.
She's no Tina Fey.
But who is?
And again, Tina Fey's no Amy Poehler.
Yes.
Yeah, like your mileage on this is entirely going to depend on just how indulgent you're feeling. And like, I was in a great mood and just kind of in the middle of the day, so not stoned. It's like, I just was feeling fair. Really good. You know, I had just gotten out of a toxic relationship with my boss and just sat down to watch this, like, yeah. Oh, that's cute. Oh, of course she knows Savinio, right? Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know how to turn yeah into a number, but it's probably like a 7 out of 10. Don't break a nail when you eat somebody's brains.
There you go. Yeah. Everything we discussed of why this was just eh. So, yeah. Like, 2 out of 10. I got nothing. Just dull. Too dull.
I mean, I'll go a little bit higher than that, surprisingly. I was not thinking I was going to be the high, middle of the totem pole, I guess. But I might go like, I might say like 3.5. You know, like, I think if you were watching a bunch of mid, you know, different range of, you know, like if you were watching, you know, Scout's Guide and you were watching Dance of the Dead and you were, you know, like you threw in like, you know, like a whole bunch of them playing in the background and people were like hanging out and watching things and somewhere else, you know, great. Cause like, you know, they're all going to be different variations of the flavor. You know, like, you know, I love the shit out of Cockney versus Zombies, but then so the next person might be like, I don't really get the jokes are not my thing and whatever. But then the next one they're going to really kind of click with. So like, yeah, it's more of a flavor thing with this type of thing, but by no means, I don't think anybody came into this being like, we're going to, dear God, know the living shit out of some subject matter we don't know anything about. Because I feel like at the end of the day, there's some affection to the subject matter, regardless of the execution. It's like, and then that does feel authentic in that way. And that's really, that's like a big thing. Because without that, it's just sort of like, you know, it just doesn't, you know, like watching, Reservation Dogs or watching Dark Winds or something where like you have to know that like the people behind the camera or North of North or whatever, where like the people behind the camera have like a regard and an understanding and a respect and a community with the people and the subject that they're talking, that they're dealing with. And if they didn't, it just doesn't, it, you know, it's the difference between eating a hamburger and eating a 3D printed hamburger. Like, it's just like, it's a very different thing. And so like, so yeah, that is not in question by any stretch of imagination. So it's just like, it's like, and to Josh's point, I think it's important to say too, like I want more than anything else to have more voices and stories from all different areas. Like I just crave that constantly of just like, give me something, somebody different, give me a different story, give me a different perspective, give me something different to say. And like, so I really, really like that. And to the idea that LGBTQA folks, like, it's just like, yeah, there's a lot of stories and a lot of opportunities to be to be had. So like, yeah, 10,000% for that, like for sure. And it's just sort of, so it's one of those things where the guy would love to see that be even more of a thing. Like, was it the fucking Wish Upon from a few years ago, where like one of the things that made me really like that, even though it wasn't very good, was the fact that there was an Asian character who was just a guy. And it's just sort of like, I fucking love that. I love the idea that like you can get people in a writing room, you can get people collaborating, get people producing things that just have different things to play out and different things to say. And it's sort of like, and I think to the point of the lunkhead in this one, the fact that they like they know who they know him, and they you know like he gets, says some tone deaf shit and whatever, and it's like, but you there's a kind of a rolling with that thing. That's the way reality is, really. And so it's like, so that speaks to a level of like coming to this material with like a level of sincerity and you know stick-to-itiveness. All that being said, I just don't think it's a well made movie, and so I just sort of like I just really struggled with getting through a bunch of almost actors and then a couple of actual actors, and so like that was the part that wore me out. But you know, so hey, that's a very affectionate 3.5 out of 10.
Yes. So yeah, so let's talk about the toxic Avenger or el Avengador toxico. Sure.
Yeah, well, that works.
Venenoso. No, he's not venomous. He's just toxic. Toxic Avenger, like you guys are going to have to run the bulk of the discussion on. It just didn't hit the right spots for me, and I ended up not remembering a lot of it. Like, okay. I watched the thing.
Fair.
So I would, Matt, I would, one of the things, and I don't know if you have some of the same stuff, but one of the things that I'm going, watching this again, because I mean, so way back in the while ago times, I get to see the world premiere of this, and then watch it just sit for nearly 3 years for nobody to be able to release the fucking thing, and so it's just like, I really enjoyed the heck out of this. It's really fun, and then nobody else gets to see it. Like, ah, fudge. And so it was just a really neat thing that just, like I said, just sat for whatever. But rewatching this was a really good opportunity, because I get to be reminded of a lot of stuff that was in there. And one of my big takeaways, and I don't know, Matt, if you had the same thing, but like when I was 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 range of age, like I watched a lot of trauma movies, like because at Video City in Prescott and at Lone Wolf Video and these places, they had a whole cadre of them. So Sergeant Kabuki Man and Toxic Avenger and just all this trauma crazy shit that they put out. Now you fast forward and you look back and go like, God, a lot of that's not good. This is not good. But it's sort of like, I watched a lot of them. And so one of my takeaways rewatching this now, and then kind of getting refreshed back to what I saw at the beginning, was that like Macon Blair directed this. I think he does a really good job of bringing in a lot of trauma things and trauma like touchstones and little in jokes and references and other kinds of stylistic things, but keeps a pace that not a single fucking trauma movie has ever been able to maintain. Because like, even going back, I mean, I have the old original Toxic Avenger, like three different fucking formats, and I really love the original one, but boy, is it hammock shaped. Like there are big stretches where you're just like, I don't need 5 more shrill people yelling at each other for 5 minutes. Like, Jesus Christ, get going. And so, like, I love that there's a lot of trauma in this without it having that, like, just endless, shrill, just unedited kind of vibe about, like, so many of trauma movies where it's just, like, it just goes and goes and goes and doesn't. So, like, I think there's a magician-like quality to how he could bring in a lot of that trauma stuff but still keep shit moving. And I was like, that was one of my takeaways I really dug. And then the other part of it was just, there was a lot more heart to this than almost any trauma movie that existed from that range of my life. Because this had some legitimate heart and decency at its core and motivation for heart that like a lot of trauma stuff just never fucking had. Like it just, you know, and God bless them. I mean, you know, God bless Lloyd and all the rest of those crazies that were making all those ones. Same thing with John Waters. Like John Waters, one of the great heroes of my life. I don't like most of his movies, but he's one of my big heroes of my life. And it's partly just because there's a tonality quality to, you know, a lot of Waters movies, a lot of the old Troma movies, where it's like they're just mean and loud and just kind of perpetual. And so this kind of reminded you, like, oh yeah, you need to have, there's a human part to this that has to be there to make it clip. So those are two of my big takeaways that I remembered now going back and watching this again.
So I keep reminding myself that I've liked a whole lot of this. You know, like having Peter Dinklage in there just means that your lead is gonna be relatable.
Right.
Because he's just so natural. Kevin Bacon just is the best villain now.
He's so good.
He just needs to be in all the things. Like, I love how many types of asshole he can be. Like in They/Them, he was the youth pastor that's gotten hip enough to use therapy speak,
yeah,
to couch his bigotry, and it was a really subtle kind of meh. And then in this, he's just the Johnny corporate asshole guy, which I'm always down for making fun of an asshole millionaire. I think the most inspired thing in this is the henchmen that are just a Slipknot band,
Killer Nuts.
Yeah, so they're just
summon the nuts.
There's one guy who's just constantly breakdancing, and that's his shit like that is what brings me joy, which is like there's no reason for that to be the way it is.
And that is that's the perfectly Troma parts of it.
And they layer so many nu metal jokes on those dudes.
Yes.
And I was so here for it. It's like each of them has a distinct personality that would be in those that kind of band that's like basically a heavy metal boy band, right? That they're, you know, just having the fucking breakdancer kill me. It's like all that worked really well. I think it's just because I had seen Deathstalker recently, the Deathstalker remake, and it's doing a lot of the same stuff, but it is never winking at you. And this one, it is constantly winking at you. And that's part of the whole gag is that self-awareness, right? But I just kept going, oh, I wish this would just be two levels less satisfied with itself. And then all of these fantastic things would have a little more space to breathe. Because just when it gets going and then it's just like the voiceover kicks in or there's a super dumb joke and it's but you were cooking.
But see, I think.
And then you did a thing. And also why is Elijah Wood the penguin?
I know it's awesome.
I know I just praised the randomness, but that really every time he was on screen, I was like, why? God, that's a weird choice, Elijah. Jesus. I thought the mustache was a weird choice. This is a weird choice. And took it he took me right out of it every time he showed up. And then when he was having his redemption arc, though, but then when he's having his redemption arc, I was like, God, I wish I liked him, because this is a great story that he's the little wormy guy that. Oh, okay.
It is such a weird. It is such a weird choice because it just stands out. It does stick out like a sore thumb. Cause he just looks, even the makeup and the walk and the everything, it's just it wasn't there's no accident to it. There's no way God, now that I look at it, fellas, he does look like Penguin from Batman Returns.
Maybe we shouldn't have fused his fingers with the latex.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Well, but even the thing I mentioned a minute ago, the breakdancing guy, when they go flying into that apartment, and he does a whoo, and then off camera goes into a table, and he goes ow. In the old trauma things, it would have been exact thing would have happened, and then it would have been my asshole, but this thing that, and it would have gone on for a minute.
Yeah,
and it's wonderfully make him seem to understand you gotta hit and go.
Yeah, I feel like this movie just trimmed all the fat off of the parts that I think the people making the trauma films at the time thought were hilarious. And I bet they had a great time doing it on set with all the people running around yelling and screaming, but they're terrible. And I think in this film, they went, okay, we're just going to go anytime there'd be one of those exhaustive gags that's just not that funny, that would have some fat guy with a pipe sticking out of his stomach and probably his cock out going for like 3 minutes. Instead, it's going to be one line of ADR from off camera. And this movie has those in spades. Like, there's so much of just like a scene's happening and there's a gap in the actual like main dialogue. And there's some fucking dude yelling from off camera saying something. And sometimes it's dumb as fuck. Sometimes it's hilarious. But it's all down to, it's over in a second. It's like, you know, slapping a mosquito. If it's annoying, it's over. Like, and I like that approach better, which again is like goes back to the idea of the pacing being much better compared to like an actual trauma film. And, you know, it just takes away, like, there's always some weird problematic stuff with, like, with the way they portray, like, race or sexuality or gender or what. Like, there's always some stuff in a movie from trauma that, like, I just go, this does, I don't even understand why this is in here. It doesn't make any sense except to maybe be like, see, we've we're edgy and crazy and, like, pushing the envelope. And, like, this one just kind of goes, yeah, that doesn't need to exist. So, like, if their way of being, like, bonkers crazy is just to make Elijah Wood look like the Penguin, like, I'll take that any day over the, like, cringy, awful old 80s trauma shit. So, yeah, well, I just had a blast with this.
Well, and, like, some of the other people that show up in this in little bits and pieces, like, fucking David Yao, Jesus Lizard. Yeah, he's like the homeless guy. Like, befriends him. It was just like, it was like about halfway through that first scene, I remember in the theater going like, I remember turning to Mark, I'm like, I think that's the guy from the Jesus Lizard. I think, because he opens his eyes when he does like a yelling thing. I'm like I've been 10 feet from that face yelling. And it's like, I think it could be him. And then it was looking up and like, holy shit, what? Of all the people on the planet, like, how the hell did that happen? It's like Tom Waits as Renfield. He was like, what the, how the fuck?
Well, he was there for the ladies.
Yeah. It's like, so he just, you know, and, but I mean, I could definitely, I mean, to Josh's point though, like, you know, and being like, you, as you said, and I don't think you said it like a flippant or shitty way, but like, you're like, you know, a lot of, I don't really remember. Like, I think that is kind of the nature of a thing of a film like this, where you walk away from it going like, I just got my, and pardon the expression, I just got my face fucked by creativity for like an hour and a half. And like a lot of it just sort of fell out the back of my head. And it's like, and yeah, because there are those kind of movies and they can be fun. They can be fun to revisit. They can fun to be, just, you know, you remember five parts of it 10 years from now. And that's kind of all you remember. Like, that's okay too. But it's like, but that is this kind of a thing where it's just this just constant barrage of just one fucking thing after another. And it's just sort of like, it's like, it's so, you know, I almost wonder if, like, they could have streamlined the story a little bit more. But it's just sort of like, you know, like, because I mean, like, the thing at the fast food place, like, that's from the original movie. Like, that's from the OG, you know, like, the fucking terrorists who don't know their elbow from their ear. I love that Megan put that in there, too. Like, these guys are like, they're like, all these eco terrorists, whatever else, but they're just like fucking idiots. Like, it's just sort of like, no, they're not, they don't have a plot, they don't have a thesis, they don't have a mission statement, they're just, you know, you get like, it's like the village people of just like the most obnoxious know-nothings of, you know, whatever. So they put that part of it in there. And like, and you know, some of the supporting cast too, they get these people that are like just way too good of actors and stuff. And so you just have this like barrage of just crazy nonsense that just sort of like, kind of goes all over the place. But I just like the heart part of it is the part that like, I think ties the room together. And so, Matt, I feel like I've talked most of this, but I was curious if you had anything that stood out to you too.
I don't know. I guess for me, the big thing that made this, and I think we touched on this right at the top, is just that like Peter Dinklage and the insane relationship they set up where it's him trying to connect with his stepson after his stepson's mom died. And oh, as the kid mentions, you weren't actually married yet. You were engaged, which is like the most, like, you know, if you want to have the underdog single dad trying to figure it out with mom died, but then you're like, how do you like really put your ankle in it? It's like you make this completely insane contrived situation. And like, the insanity of that is, again, very fitting for like a trauma film. It's absurd, but that at the same time, it does actually work because they're playing it straight. Like,
their relationship is so sweet. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so just supportive of his weird kid.
That's a legit thing. And it's astonishing.
Yeah.
You know, and even, you know, Peter Dinklage, like, not standing up to our cartoonish, you know, mobster guy when he's bullying the neighbor lady with her cat. Like, that's a very human moment, too.
Yeah.
And, like, they, that's just something that you don't get in, like, the original, where it's just, you know, insane, socially inept dipshit nerd gets murdered by 80s bullies. Like, that's all. It's just because he's a fucking nerd. Like, there's no heart to that film aside from, like, okay, nerd gets revenge, but, like, those movies tend to be problematic. So
yeah,
the not necessarily a great plot to hang your hat on. So, like, I think that this one just, like, it gave me an actual story with, like, some actual, like, emotional stakes, shaved off a lot of the shit that just kind of makes me go ugh and just makes you feel a little gross. And I found a lot of this fucking hilarious. Like, I think they do the gore stuff in fun ways. Like, every couple of times, like, when they just completely, like, smack off one of the dude's jaw, you're like, God, that just went so much gory. Because I expect the old trauma of, like, you know, they swing the mop, and then at the last second, you can almost see that it's just a watermelon now, and then it explodes.
Yeah.
And then here, you're like, oh, no, you have a budget, so you can make it really disgusting. So that would kind of shock a laugh out of me every now and then, because I was like, all right, this is just kind of fun to see it done well. And, you know, Dinklage is hilarious. There's so many stupid scenes. Speaking of the Jesus lizard guy, like, am I going to be okay? He's like, how would I know? You're the fucking doctor. Who the hell told you I was a doctor?
Yeah.
You did. What do you mean? Like, he just keeps getting fucked by, like, just one additional thing. The fact that every time they bring up his condition, there's a jackhammer because they're remodeling the building.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So you never have to have an actual disease that people can go, well, that's not how that works. Like, just little things like that. This just kept making me happy.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's, and that's what I wanted from it. Yeah. It's not like, it's got its emotional beats. I don't think it has a ton to really say about, like, the human condition or whatever. But yeah, it's just, it's a delight. And yeah.
Except that corporations are shitty, which is a message, yeah, like, I am always,
you know, and this money, this movie raised a bunch of money to relieve medical debt for people. So
yeah,
yeah. Talk about this, thing. Like,
yeah, yeah.
So many quality humans involved in this movie.
Yeah.
Too.
I love the bit, speaking of the David, yeah, the David Yao's character, the homeless sort of doctor guy, when he just sort of goes, he gives this whole little monologue, and the camera kind of pans out, and he's like, he just goes, kind of like in a presenting sort of way, he just kind of goes like, he's like, yeah, it worked out, look at how it worked out for me, it worked out pretty well for me, and as it's panning back, you see like a rat run out of a refrigerator over his shoulder, it's like, Jesus Christ. So it's like, yeah, it's like, so man, I'm with you. Like, there's those little moments of just sort of like, it's just sort of like, it just, it felt like it got that spirit of some of the trauma stuff and just shed all the nonsense and all the endless unedited sort of sequences of just people yelling and being loud and annoying and awful. Like, I've always like, I don't know if trauma released it or if they distributed it or what, but I always think of like ones that Lloyd didn't actually do, but they kind of were part of under that umbrella. The Witch Who Came from the Sea is always the one I always think of. Like, somebody who's got some stones have got to go take Witch Who Came from the Sea and is like, remake that and like make the actual movie it's supposed to be, because it is just so hamstrung by every, yeah, sweaty, beer-stained, groping, awful thing. And it's just like, God almighty. So it's just like, get moving with it, you know. And so it's sort of like, and then of course Lloyd shows up in this too, because of course he does.
Yeah,
you know, so good. It's like, it's because it's like Stan Lee, you know, so it's just like he's got to be in there at some point or other.
Yeah. But,
so yeah, I mean, this is just one of those things, like I said, if you just want to be, you know, like as Shakespeare once said, if you want to be face fucked by creativity for a little while and just, you know, like, just, you know, kind of settle in with this bit of stuff. And you know, like I said, a lot of people who very clearly like have a lot of affection for what they're doing, just giving it a go, and maybe not every decision works for sure, but it has a life to it that I think a lot of the trauma things didn't at the time or do now. So, you know, I appreciate it for that, for sure.
Yeah, like I wasn't mad at it by any stretch, and would continually go like, oh yeah, that bit. Yeah, that was a good bit.
Yeah.
It just, I think I really just wanted a more sincere tone to it. And that was what was throwing me off, is just that remnant of the trauma tone, faint as it was. And I don't mean, like, there are sincere, heartfelt moments in this, But then there is like a layer of irony, it felt like, over the rest of it.
And yeah, I think that's fair.
I feel like just having watched Deathstalker and they just don't really do that. They just kind of present like, yeah, this is a little Yoda looking motherfucker who talks like Patton Oswalt. And that's just,
yeah,
that's where we're at.
Yep. We're just like, going for it.
Yeah. The our villain has giant bulbous like cancers growing out of his ass and he uses them to kill someone at the end. Like that's where we're at. You know, they never have to stop and say, but really folks.
Right.
So yeah. And, but that is the tone that he was going for. I don't think that he failed at doing any of this, and whether I would like it better another way is really not his fault. So, yeah, I mean, this was kind of similar to me for Queens of the Dead because I enjoyed that as way more than you guys did. So I'd say it's a 7.5 for me, like enthusiastic,
but still very respectable.
Yeah, that's a robust number. That's a number that gives you a firm handshake.
Yeah, I think when I first saw this back in August, I think I gave this a full 10. I'm going to amend that to a 9, I think, on the second viewing this last week here. Still absolutely love it. And I think just part of the excitement that gave me that full like 10 feeling was like seeing it in a theater and having other people like also yelling and screaming at all the same parts I was, which is always amazing. Oh, and then also just like the miracle that it existed, it came out, it was as good as it was and didn't have all the shit I usually hate, was like, I was very intoxicated on that idea at the time. And like, I think with, you know, a little bit of like distance from it, I still love all that shit, but it's like, yeah, it could be tightened up a little bit here and there, but it still is just a blast. And it's one of those things I could just go back and put on, you know, as a comfort movie on a weekend while folding laundry or whatever. So yeah. 9 out of 10, Avenging Toxins.
Avenging Toxins.
My new health brand. Me and Gwyneth Paltrow.
just don't make a candle that smells like your balls. Yeah, I mean, it was. Yeah, it's quite the spectacle. And I love that. I love the idea that like you fast forward from 30 something years, and some other 15, 16, 17 year old kid can, I mean, they'd be fighting on streaming now, of course, but you know, can stumble upon this thing and then like watch this and be like, wow, people make things like this, like wow, like you just kind of get that charge from it, like that makes me really happy, because it's like, you know, just knowing what the lengths they went to try to get this damn thing done, and just the people they've got to bring in to be part of it and all those things, like, you know, that's going to speak to somebody. Like somebody's going to get on a Friday night, is going to watch this and just feel charged up to, you know, go out and make bad movies in their backyard for a while before they can make good movies later. And like, that's really fucking cool. So like, so yeah, just, so that I really love a lot. And, you know, watching this again, like I said, there's some parts that really stood out to me that I really, really kind of dug. And there's parts that still, like, just couldn't help but like, boo, laughing like an idiot. And then fucking David Yao and everybody else. So just, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a whole lot. So yeah, I'm going to go like, I think, I mean, Dust Bunny was still my absolute favorite this week. So I think I'll say like 8.5. I think I'll say like 8.5 out of 10, 8.5 out of 10. Oh, 6 months to a year. Well, I mean, so a year would be the best case scenario, which is like
the fucking doctor.
That part, just like, I had to pause it. I was giggling so hard at that part. It was just like this feckless doofus. Like, but like, that was actually a good example of like not doing necessarily a wink. And like, it's this like dumb setup and a dumb, silly, almost Marx Brothers gag with a jackhammer in the background, whatever. But then he just had that year, that 6 months to a year. So I guess the best case scenario would be a year. Just like, fucking, God,
but then he's got his head, like forehead all the way down on the desk, and he goes like, well, there is a treatment. He goes, what? Why wouldn't he say that first? It's just so good. Like, it's so broad, but like, again, it's Peter Dinklage. So it kind of,
yeah,
sadly funny. Like, it's,
well, so, and good. I kept thinking, Josh, and I kept thinking of when he's in the stairwell on the phone with that perky benefits lady or whatever else, and she's yeah, like, well, on platinum level, like, well, does it include the thing from the gold level tier of the gold of the platinum tier? I kept thinking of Cigna. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh god, that's just
because we've all sat through those.
Oh yeah.
And like last year's, they had this the explaining of all the things. Well, you know, this is your copay, but that doesn't mean that that goes towards your deductible. Of course, your copay doesn't go to your deductible, and your deductible will kick in after you've finished paying your copays, and then your but your maximum out of pocket is this, unless it's for the family, when then it's this. So if both of you get sick in the same year, it's going to be a couple grand more. But you know, the they're covering 80% of it, so it's only $300 a month to you guys, and. Do you have any questions? And I always want to go, how do you sleep?
Yeah.
That's the only question I ever have. So having him have that conversation was just, it is so goddamn realistic.
Yeah.
Like not even satire. I think that was very, very sharp.
Yeah. So it's just sort of like, you know, it's, but again, I couldn't help but think of your days at Cigna, Josh. She's like so pleasant. She's so nice. Like, they could have met her be super, super bitchy and mean, but she's just so pleasant. I was like, oh my God. So, but yeah, at least you know more people can see it, which is never a bad thing. So,
yeah, check it out.
Yeah.
Well, we'll take a quick break and then we'll tell you what assignments we have granted ourselves for the coming week.
Yes, I'm. Okay.
So next time we are going to go back to the Fridays because you got to get down on Friday. We do. So Friday, we're in love with doing Friday the 13th parts 4, 5, and 6. I think this is the run that has some of my favorites in it. Like the Crispin Glover one is in this one. Yeah.
Yep. And yeah. Four is, I think, my favorite one. It's four is awesome. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this bunch because it'll be a good bunch.
This will be fun because I watched them like 2 months ago for the first time. But I still would have to pull up a Wikipedia page to tell you which things happen in which movies. So
oh, for sure. Yeah.
Doing it again, it'll be even better. So Fridays 4, 5, and 6 for next time. And I've been Josh this entire time and I say good night.
We will be doing an unrelated short for the next episode as well. This one is called Avoid Asking and will be available in the episode post on horrorshowhotdog.com. And I think I found this one through Shortverse, if I remember right. So I don't know if this is on like YouTube and stuff, but it's around someplace. I don't know. Like I said, you can go to our website to find it. And with all that being said, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. I just was reminded, pardon me, frog in my throat. I was reminded of, as I've been going through the moving process of moving all different objects and finding all kinds of interesting things, I found those DVDs that I bought from a truck stop. Chupacabra versus the Alamo and the other ones, where else. And I was like, I couldn't bring myself to get rid of them. I just was like, they don't take up much space. They're flat. I mean, what's the worst? What's the harm, really? And so I still have those fucking things.
Love a tarantula.
Yeah, it's just like, why? Which is all just as a reminder that we do this silly thing for ourselves because we like hanging out with each other, but also we do this for you, silly fuckers who listen to it. So, you know, it's sort of like if you're at a truck stop sometime and you see a little bin of $2 movies or whatever else and you see something like Chupacabra versus the Alamo, I mean, you could do worse. You could go play golf, which would be an absolute waste of fucking time. So watch Chupacabra versus the Alamo. And next time we're talking to you, will be hopefully relatively soon. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you again pretty soon. I'd be good. Take care. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
It's 4, 5, 6, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Hang on.
Go on and get your kicks.
Let's see. What? Oh, yeah.
Okay. You don't need the money with the face like that, do you, honey?
Dun, 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 dun,
dun. You don't need a face with money like that, do you, honey? Got a lust for a life. No, it's a different song.
Is it really?
Is it, Kyle?
Every time they play that drum beat, Iggy Pop comes running out and they're like, no, dude.
God damn it, Iggy Pop. Get back in the shed.